brother and sister-in-law, George and Sally Dominey, run a goat farm near Blandford in Dorset.
It's not a goat farm.
It bloody is. My brother Frank and me have raised goats here for 40 years. It's a bloody goat farm.
Your half's a goat farm, if you like, but when Frank died, he left his half to me.
Yeah, don't I know it?
You don't act like you know it.
I know it all right.
And I don't like goats, horrid, hairy beasts. I like flowers.
Flowers?
Yes, flowers. And let me tell you, you can get a far better price per square metre farm for beautiful daffodils than your horrible goats.
Well, you can't.
No, I can't, because every spring, just as the daffodils are about to blossom, his rotten goats come over and eat them.
Goats is goats. If you grow flowers on a goat farm, goats is going to eat them.
It's not a goat farm. Only your half's a goat farm. My half is a daffodil farm.
The goats don't know that.
No, they bloody don't.
So, excuse me, but why don't you put a fence up around your daffodils?
Yeah, the woman's talking sense. Why don't you do that?
Why should I? It's his goats are causing the problem, not my daffodils. He should put up a fence.
I'm not putting up a fence. I was here first. You want to grow daffodils on a goat farm, you'd best protect them.
Well, look, he's got a point, hasn't he?
No, he hasn't got a point. But if he's so rich he can afford to lose a herd of goats every spring, that's his affair.
Lose them?
Yes, lose them. On my own farm.
I don't understand. Why lose them?
Because daffodils are poisonous to goats, that's why. Of course it's your fault. You come onto a goat farm and you grow goat poison. You're responsible for the goat deaths. Put up a bloody fence.
My daffs don't need a fence. They stay where they are. If your goats need to be kept away from them, you build a fence.
So, wait, at the moment, every autumn...
I buy a new herd of goats.
And I plant a new field of daffodils.
And every spring...
His goats eat my daffodils.
And her daffodils poison my goats.
But neither of you will put a fence up.
Because it's her job!
That was a sketch about the human condition. Write that down, the human condition. And now John's written that sketch, he doesn't expect to see any humans behaving selfishly or short-sightedly ever again. All right.
And now on Radio 4, since your hands are deep in washing up water and you'd have to dry them to turn off the radio, it's time once again to accidentally hear a bit of The Archers. And Tim, or possibly Ken, is hard at work.
Yip di dip di dip di dee yip di diddly di do yip di dip di diddly dee bong.
All right, girl, easy does it.
Oh, hello there, one of the men who are always tired. I see you're hard at work.
Oh, hello there, one of the other tired men.
Hello.
The weather's looking a bit changeable, so I thought I'd probably better make a start on the rhythmic thumping of the wooden objects.
Oh, good for you. And I see you've got a cow with you.
Well, of course. How could you tell I was working if I didn't occasionally testily soothe a cow? All right, girl, calm down. Anyway, were you looking for me?
I was, actually. A woman with an accent, who's your wife or girlfriend or possibly sister, told me I might find you here just now in the scene where I asked her where she thought I might find you, and she said I might find you out here.
Well, do you know, that makes a lot of sense, actually, because I just told her in the scene before that I was coming out here, so that would explain how she knew where you might find me.
Oh, that's that mystery cleared up. Hello there.
Oh, hello, it's the posh man. I thought they killed you off.
No, they killed off the very posh man. There's still half a dozen or so of us fairly posh men knocking around with all the inexplicable Scots and Geordies. Anyway, I was just passing on my way from somewhere else to a third location. I thought I saw you there working or possibly having a drink.
There, girl, steady on.
Thank you. Working. And I thought I'd just look in to ask if you knew where I could find the woman with the accent.
Yes, as it happens, I saw her just now in a kitchen when I was asking if she knew where I could find
whoever this is. And
she was telling me I could find him here.
Yes, and I saw her a bit earlier than that, also in the kitchen, when I was telling her I was going to be here. Information she later relayed as described.
Good. I was hoping to have a word with her, and now it looks like I'm going to be able to do so in the kitchen.
Oh, a happy ending, then.
Yes, all's well that ends well.
It's an ill wind that blows nobody any good. Be sure to repeat to her every syllable of this conversation, won't you?
You know I will. Well, let's be off.
Oh, you've got a tractor now.
Sounds like it. Cheerio!
Oh, hi, Bex. I wasn't expecting...
Wow. Totally empty shop. That's great, isn't it?
It was quite busy earlier on. There's always a bit of a lull over lunch.
I'll tell you, when there's always a bit of a lull, sweetheart, there's always a bit of a lull when you're on the till. Why is that, do you think?
I don't think it's me.
Oh, don't you? Well, maybe that's because you ain't seen the sales board. In the 2 weeks since we opened, your sales are a third of mine. One third. What is that, Laura? Are you a third less competent or two thirds more lazy? Which is it?
I'm sorry, I'll try...
Hello, welcome to Fairyland. Hi. The magical grotto where dreams can come true. Anything you're looking for in particular...
No, we're just browsing.
Of course. Have fun. There are treasures under every leaf. And that's not all. Upsales. I upsold 68% of my transactions. Do you know how many you upsold?
I don't. I'm not
12%. 12%. Is that good enough?
No.
Does that sound good enough to you?
No.
Then buck your ideas up or you and me are going to have a falling out. Oh, hello. What have you found in Fairyland?
Wings. I'm going to have some wings.
Oh, wonderful. It's a very special moment when a fairy first gets her wings, isn't it, Laura?
Oh, yes. That'll be £4.99, please, sir.
Here you are.
Thank you. Have a lovely day.
I'm sorry. Did you not hear me say upsell?
I...
Is that your problem? Are you deaf?
But she only wanted wings. How can I upsell?
Darling, little fairy girl.
Yes?
I think you dropped your wand, darling.
I haven't got a wand.
Oh, of course not, because you're a little girl. I'm sorry. I thought you was a fairy.
I am a fairy, aren't I, Daddy?
Of course you are. Not all fairies have wands.
No, that's true. Maybe you're the type of fairy that doesn't have a magic wand.
I want a wand.
Well, I tell you what, when we get home, we'll make you a wand. How about that?
Oh, well. You're a lucky girl to have a daddy that can make a real magic wand like this one that lights up when you wave it.
Oh, Daddy, I want that one, please. Can I have that one?
How much?
£12.95. Batteries not included.
Fine.
Got it? And I do not ever want to see a kid walking out of this shop with wings and no wands again. Capiche?
Capiche.
Halt! Hey, what's all this?
Morning, sir.
New policy on freight, sir. Checkpoints at all entrances to the city.
What? Why?
Heightened security, sir.
After the recent attack.
Exactly. This your horse, sir?
Well, of course it's my horse.
It sounds all right.
Yeah, maybe. Can you make it neigh for me, sir?
Neigh for you? Why in...
As I say, sir, heightened security after the recent attack. No one gets into Troy unless we hear their horse neigh.
That's a pretty good night.
Yeah, not bad. Still, the Greeks have got highly skilled animal impersonators these days.
Have they?
We've got to work on the presumption that they do. Let's do in the checklist.
Righto. Sir, is this your horse?
Yes.
Have you left your horse unattended at any point?
No.
Have you noticed any unusual doors, handles, zips or hinges on your horse?
No.
Has anyone asked you if they can climb into your horse?
No!
All right, then, seems legit.
Thank you.
Just put that in the logbook then, Sergeant. One horse, verified equine, one cart containing a dozen... What are those things, sir?
Life-size figurines of Greek soldiers for the Soldier Museum.
Fair enough. Welcome to Troy.
Hello,
Hello, I'm Patsy Straightwoman, and welcome to the interview sketch. One day, maybe I'll get some jokes, but that day is not today. This week, I'm joined by Dr. Richard Latimer from the National Gallery, and he's going to be telling us a bit about his work detecting fakes and forgeries. Dr. Latimer, welcome.
Thank you.
Now, you've brought some examples with you, I see.
Yes, I have. This piece, for instance, The Kitchen Maid, was thought for decades to be a genuine Vermeer.
But no longer?
No. You see, it's beautifully done, really. Whoever the artist was, they're almost a master in their own right. But if you look very carefully here, you see the maid is loading a dishwasher.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, you see, our analysis reveals that the dishwasher was painted with a pigment known as zinc white. And that wasn't invented until the 19th century.
I see. But it's not always so clear-cut.
No, not at all. No, sometimes we just have to go by our experience and intuition. So, in this purported Rubens, for instance, the abduction of Helen of Troy, do you see how hesitant or almost jerky the strokes are, especially here on Theseus's motorbike?
I think I see.
And here on Helen's bikini.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, he's barely managed to render the tassels at all. Now, this last example, Christ Quelling the Waves, purportedly by Michelangelo. Now, this is an interesting one because it's actually nothing about the technique that gives it away. The clue is in the subject matter itself. I wonder if you can spot it.
Let me see. Is it something to do with the positions of the beach volleyball team?
No, they're fine.
Too many tentacles on the giant squid?
No. The thing is, Michelangelo, as a Roman Catholic, would never have portrayed the Christ figure wearing a Geneva gown, a form of clerical dress only ever worn by Protestant clergy, and even then almost never whilst riding a jet ski.
Of course.
It's obvious when you see it, isn't it? Of course, it's a terrible shame it turns out not to be authentic, because it was thought to be the only surviving example of Michelangelo working in this medium.
You mean ink?
Yes, but specifically tattoo ink. Thanks, Steve. You can put your shirt back on now.
Cheers.
I'm home. Can you let down the gangplank?
Coming.
How was your day, dear?
It's all right.
Oh, dear, as good as that. Are those boys picking on you again?
No.
Tell me the truth.
Maybe.
Oh, my poor boy. Can't you just ignore them?
I am ignoring them. They don't ignore me.
All right. Well, listen. I'll tell you something about bullies.
Oh, no, Mum.
All bullies are secretly cowards. Oh. No, hear me out. They're only picking on you because they think they can get away with it. So, listen. Have you tried fluffing out your coat to make yourself look bigger?
Mum, no.
Seriously, darling, it's the only thing they understand. Especially if you stand on your tiptoes and arch your back.
No, Mum, I'm not like you. That won't work.
Of course it'll work. They're not going to pick on you if they think you're twice as big as you really are they? Stands to reason.
What's all this?
Oh, Jim, will you talk to your son? He's having trouble from bullies again.
Oh, bullies, eh? Well, any one thing to do with bullies, son.
Yeah, I know. Stand up to them.
No. Spread your wings, puff out your feathers, and screech at the top of your voice. Never fails. They think you're bigger than you really are, you see.
God, Dad, you're worse than Mum.
What are they bullying you about anyway?
Oh, I don't know. Maybe that my dad's an owl, my mum's a pussycat, and we live in a pea green boat.
Oh. Me? No, I'm a copper, actually. No, well, actual fact, a sheriff. I know, I don't look much like John Wayne, do I? No, it's a ceremonial thing. It's like a cross between a police chief and a kind of mayor, I suppose. Yeah, that's right. Look, Nottingham way. Oh, have you? How come? All right. Yeah, no, I know him. Not personally, obviously, but I've seen him. Riding through the glen. Hmm? Oh, no, he does do that. No, I'm not saying he doesn't. He robs the rich and gives to the poor. Man, that's practically everyone up our way, with the king's taxes the way they are. I mean, everyone's on the breadline, scrabbling to feed and clothe themselves. You know what doesn't help with that?
Some rich kid with a messiah complex. All dressed in green because it goes with his eyes. Nicking a purse of gold from a toff and then dumping it on some random village. Do you know what happens then? Well, first off, everyone waves Robin Hood bye-bye, and then they have themselves a little riot. Because if you're a starving peasant with a gold piece and you know everyone in your village has also just been given a gold piece, you might be tempted to start doing a little bit of wealth distribution on your own account. So an hour later, most of the villagers are as poor as ever, only a couple of them now got a broken rib or a cracked head or a severe attack of the deads. And the strongest or most violent has got a purse of gold coins. Now, if he's the strongest, it's possible he might not also be the brightest. So like as not, his next move is to take the cart into the nearest town or all into a merchant, more likely a tavern, and give it the old, hello, my good man. Hey, I'm a stinking peasant. What, we'd like to buy a hogshead of ale out of this silk purse of gold I perfectly normally have. At which point, either he gets beaten up himself or they keep him talking, send a messenger for me. I've got to arrest him, haven't I? Because I'm presented with the baffling case of the penniless peasant with the purse of gold that looks uncannily like the purse of gold Guy of Gisborne reported Nick last week. Well, you don't have to be Taggart, do you? Taggart? Oh, he's another sheriff. He works with me and my mate John Wayne I mentioned earlier. So I don't want to arrest him, but... Well, maybe I do if he's beaten up all his neighbours, but maybe he hasn't, because maybe he's a she. In which case, it's perfectly possible Robin Hood gives her the whole lot to start with because he took a fancy to her. And she says, why, thank you, good Sir Robin... for an hour or so. Heads into town to buy a dress and it ends the same way. Anyway, if I can't avoid arresting them, I arrest them and I try to stop them getting killed, and if I do, they end up in prison. Meanwhile, of course, I confiscate the stolen goods. And I don't pocket it because I happen not to be bent, actually, but nor do I take it back to the injured party myself. Oh, no, because I can't be trusted with that job. That is a job for, oh, goodness me, His Majesty's Collector of Taxes. So, Guy of Gisborne gets back maybe a quarter of what he lost, and the rest is split between King John and the tax collector's back pocket. So what's he actually done, Robin Hood? He's robbed from the rich and given to the king. And on the way, he's left the poor, injured, dead, imprisoned, and on at least two occasions, to my certain knowledge, in the family way. Well done, Robin Hood, if that is your real name. Locksley! But, of course, I come off as the bad guy. And why? Because I don't have Alan a bloody Dale writing ballads about me. People will believe any old bunk if you sing it.
Yeah, thing is, though, lover boy, I don't give a rat's arse about your supply lines. You can tie your supply lines round your neck and jump off Blackfriars Bridge for all I care. Only thing I'm interested in is, when I order 4 pallets of mixed flower fairy slumber lights, mixed is what I get, not all 4 pallets worth of baby bleeding bluebell. Am I making myself clear to you? I've got to go. Hello and welcome to Fairyland.
Oh, thank you.
Where dreams can come true.
Is that right?
Lovely. Anything you're looking for in particular?
No, just looking round.
Of course, have fun. There are treasures under every leaf. Oh,
I can see that. You've done the place up lovely, haven't you?
Yeah, we like to think so.
Used to be a Ryman's.
That's right.
And now look at it, a little fairy grotto. Shame, really.
Shame? Not following, sorry.
All that effort and now you're going to have to pack up.
I don't think so.
Well, I do think so. You see, darling, you don't seem aware. Carshalton is a princess town.
Is that a fact?
That's a fact. 15 years I've run Princess Palace on Westmore Street. There's no more meat on this bone. You want to peddle your stinking fairies, you can do it in Croydon.
I've got news for you, sweetheart. Fairies outrank princesses.
Oh, yeah? How'd you work that out?
Fairies is magic.
Maybe so. But what princesses is real. Anyway, be that as it may, we don't want no fairies in Carshalton. And I don't mean that as against the homosexual community, because I've got a lot of time for them. I mean, quite literally, We don't want no fairies in Carshalton.
Well, then, that is a shame for you, isn't it? Because you've got fairies in Carshalton. You've got a whole grotto of them. So if you don't like the competition, sweetheart, you're going to need to face up or get out.
Oh, I'll face up, darling. Don't you worry about me. I'll face right up.
Good.
But fair warning, when I do, there'll be nothing left of you in your poxy shop but a smudge of glitter on Carshalton High Street.
Bring it on!
Oh, I will. Be lucky. Goodbye, fairy.
Goodbye, princess. Okay, everyone, just a few more minutes and I'll ask Helen to change pose. Nice, Marjorie. Just watch out for the foreshortening of the leg there. Oh, well, this is a good start, Neil, but you should try and finish up now. It's 3 more minutes, everybody.
No, it is finished.
But you haven't done the torso.
No. Well, I'm not going to.
Why not?
It's too rude.
Why is it rude?
Well, it's... I mean, she's... Do I really have to explain to you why it's rude?
It's not rude. It's the human body. The naked female form has been studied for centuries.
Yes, but not by me.
Then why did you come to a life drawing class?
Well, I thought maybe it wouldn't be too rude. But it turns out it is much, much too rude. I mean, it's bad enough I'm looking at her, but drawing them, her... I mean, we haven't even been introduced.
Oh, would that help? What?
Oh, no, 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 no.
Helen, can you come over here a minute?
Don't make her move!
This is Helen.
Yes.
Helen, this is... I'm sorry, I've forgotten your name.
So am I.
What?
Neil. My name is Neil. Oh, God.
Neil, Helen. Helen, Neil. Now, shake hands.
Oh, God, no.
Why not?
What, touch her? I mean, no. Yes, of course. If it's all right with you, obviously, of course it's all right. Why would... All right, so, OK. Here I go.
There. Now you've been introduced.
Yes.
And you've shaken hands.
Yes.
So now go back to your easel.
Yes.
And draw her breasts.
No further questions, Milad.
Mr. Bloganmore, your witness.
Now then, Mrs. Rattigan, who claimed that at 9 o'clock precisely on the night of your employer's murder, you passed her bedroom and heard the voice of the defendant raised in bitter argument with the victim?
I certainly do.
It's lies. She's a damn liar.
Control the prisoner.
Come, come, Mrs. Rattigan, do you seriously expect the court to believe that from a snatch of muffled argument heard through 4 inches of oak door, you can positively identify the defendant's voice?
Certainly I do. I'd know it anywhere.
Indeed. Then let us put it to the test. Be so good as to close your eyes, Mrs. Rattigan. Now, is this the voice of the defendant?
You horrible lady, I intend to kill you now by bashing you with this hammer.
No, his voice ain't nothing like that. It's all deep and scotch.
Oh, quite correct, Mrs. Rattigan. That was, in fact, the voice of Police Constable Atkins. So, in fact, the voice you heard was this.
Hoot, you horrible lady. I intend to kill you now by bashing you with a hammer hen.
Yes, that's him. That's the defendant.
Or is it? In fact, that was still PC Atkins, a leading light of the Metropolitan Police Amateur Dramatic Society. Thank you, Atkins.
Oh, my pleasure.
To you, Mrs. Rattigan, that you cannot tell the defendant's voice from any other deep Scottish brogue. Furthermore, did your mistress possess a wireless radio set?
Yes.
And where was it located?
In her bedroom.
Her bedroom, indeed. And as Exhibit D, a copy of the Radiophonic Times, informs us, my lord, from 8:30 that evening, the British Broadcasting Corporation favoured us with a radio play entitled The Bitter Argument. Starring Mr. Hamish Campbell as the angry Scotsman. And it was his voice the defence admits that Mrs. Rattigan heard and mistook for that of my blameless client. No further questions.
Milad, I should like to call as a surprise witness the director of that play.
Yes, that sounds entirely usual.
Sir, could you tell the court what occurs precisely 30 minutes into your drama?
Certainly. That is when, in a daring coup de théâtre, the titular argument enters an 8-minute period of sulky silence.
And so, the prosecution will show at 9 o'clock the only deep Scottish voice to be heard in the house was that of the defendant,
No further questions.
But is it not also the case, sir, that when the drummer resumes, louder, angrier and more Scottish than before, it does so with the sound effect of a clock striking nine?
Quite so.
Which the defence will prove is what Mrs. Rattigan heard at 8:02:09, leading her into twin errors both about the time and the owner of the deep Scottish voice. No further questions.
Or would have heard, but Mrs. Rattigan, is it not the case that your mistress's wireless has been out of order for nearly 3 months?
That's right.
No further questions.
Precisely so, until that very night, when, the defence will prove, she called out a wireless repairman to fix the apparatus. A wireless repairman named Angus McWhirter. No further questions.
The prosecution will now call Mr. McWhirter. Sir, you are Angus Jock Callum Thistle Shortbread McWhirter, are you not?
Hey, that I am, hello.
No further questions.
And, Mr. McWhirter, do you work alone in your wireless repairment endeavours?
No, I'm always accompanied by my son.
And how would you characterise his voice?
Oh, kiss enough, a deep rumbling sort of voice.
No further questions.
You refer, of course, to your son, Ramon, who was brought up by your estranged wife in Madrid. And whom the prosecution now calls.
Hola.
No further questions.
Mr. Brogan-Moore, as it does seem implausible that Mrs. Rattigan could have mistaken the tones of either this falsetto Scots wireless repairman or his gravel-voiced Spanish son for those of your client, perhaps you would be better off taking another tack.
Your lordship is quite right, as always. But for this last question, Mr. McWhirter, Ramon, did you, in fact, repair the victim's wireless?
Aye, of course.
We're very good.
Precisely. The wireless was, after all, working. Just in time for Mr. Hamish Cameron's deep-voiced Scottish radiophonic performance to lead Mrs. Rattigan into fatal error. No further questions.
Ah. My lord, I fear in the face of the weight of evidence the defence has assembled, the prosecution has no other course but to withdraw our case.
Yes, in your learned face, loser.
One moment. I have one question of my own. Mr. McWhirter Sr., Senor McWhirter Jr., we have established you were closeted with the victim at the time of the crime. I wonder, did you happen to see who killed her?
Oh, aye, that we did.
It was he, the defendant.
Aye, we saw him clearly. We wondered when you'd ask.
Oh, well, if you're going to cheat.
John Finnemore's souvenir programme was written by and starred John Finnemore, with Margaret Caborn-Smith, Simon Kane, Laurie Lewin and Carrie Quinlan. The producer was Ed Morrish. John Finnemore's souvenir programme is sponsored by his Auntie Fran. 25p a sketch, or a fiver if he finishes the whole show.